Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, my week in cars, with Matt Pryor, this side of the table, Steve Cropley, that side. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Very good, mate. Very well.
And your cat, Midge, in the middle.
With the cat in the middle of us both, yeah. Steve, we've got a letter from Phil Van Dam. Do you know we talked about van and commercial vehicle speed limits the other day being not the same as cars?
Yeah.
Except for car-derived vans,
yeah.
Dual-purpose vehicles. Phil says he bought an ex-post office Fiat Doblo 1.3 multijet. In the first year he owned it, he got a mobile speed camera fine for doing 58 miles an hour on a 60-mile-an-hour road. Okay. So he phoned North Yorkshire Police and said, a bit confused about this, and the police officer suggested he checks the V5, and it said, car-derived van. So the police said, we'll ignore the letter, and nothing would happen anyway. So then Phil sells that van, buys another van, a Fiat Doblo 1.3 multijet, exactly the same thing as before,
yep.
But a post-facelift version. Then he gets a summons again for doing 58 miles an hour on a 60 for exactly the same thing. So he phones the number and says, how about this? And they say, actually, this one is a light goods vehicle.
Oh.
Because in the facelift, they increased the maximum payload by about 40 kilos, and in doing so, stepped into a different tax bracket.
Oh, God.
So, yes, on checking the V5, that one just said C1 light commercial vehicle, not car derived van, for basically the same
car. The law is such an ass.
Yeah. Anyway, as Phil says, the system is a hodgepodge. I'm looking at my speedo and cross-referencing to the road signs to see what speed I'm in a vehicle which has got bigger brake equipment and, you know, got rid of the leaf springs and is yet deemed not capable, not as capable as the early one. Probably should be looked at, that system, shouldn't
I think. Surely.
Which all came about, listener, if you don't remember, the Ford Ranger Raptor is not a dual-purpose vehicle. It is a light commercial vehicle, according to its V5, on account of it having an unladen weight of more than 2,045 kilos. Oh, and I sold us some duff info as well, because I said no single cab pickup can be a dual-purpose vehicle, only double cab pickups.
Yeah.
And a reader wrote in to say, actually, that's not correct. A single cab pickup can be, but it has to have a four-wheel drive option.
Good God.
But a two-wheel drive pickup cannot be. But a four-wheel drive single cab pickup can be. Or it doesn't have to be a pickup. It can be anything with one row of seats. If it's got two rows of seats, it doesn't have to be four-wheel drive. If it only has one row of seats, it has to have a four-wheel drive option to be a dual-purpose vehicle. to add another layer into...
How long are we going to remember that lot?
I suspect I might have forgotten that by next time round.
How long? The man with the Doblos, what speed should he have been doing?
So he should have been doing, in his first generation Doblo, he could do 60 on a single carriageway, 70 on a dual carriageway, 70 on a motorway. In the second Doblo, he could do 50 on a single carriageway, 60 on a dual carriageway, but 70 on a motorway.
Oh, I see. Right.
And the application of cameras that will read a number plate and decide what speed you should be doing, and know intrinsically what speed you should be doing, because it references it to the V5, will be the issue.
The issue.
Such as it is, yeah.
Cripes.
Yeah. It's slightly convoluted. I just think, you know, so all these vehicles are so capable these days that actually, for the sake of keeping up with traffic flow, if they were just all permitted to do the same thing, that would make life a bit easier.
And the thing is, it's the age thing too, isn't it? You know, his nearly new Doblo is a damn sight more capable than somebody's arthritic MGB, isn't it?
Mm. yeah 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 Yeah.
Anyway,
on the subject of capable vehicles, Steve, let's talk our respective columns for the next half an hour or thereabouts, starting with the £400,000 Rolls-Royce Spectre. You've had your first go in one the other day.
Yeah, I mean, we've driven them, haven't we? Our various lads of our types have done it. But there was a Goodwood drive day for hacks, and I went along, and I was lucky enough to get a go in it. There's a road route around the district. And out I went in it, and I just thought it was superb. I had trouble deciding how I feel, because the trouble with cars of that sort of nature, I suppose, is that you have to try and think yourself into the mental state that would realistically have you buying one in the first place. There's no point in being a sort of on the bones of your backside and then saying, well, it's far too much, because it isn't for the likes of me. It's for somebody with 10 cars in the garage and a biz jet down the road. And probably a boat on the Med. And if you can think like that, then I see the argument for that car. I really liked it. I think they did a lovely job of it. I'm amazed by the way the styling works. It's 5.5 meters long, so longer than your Ranger Raptor, by about 20 centimeters. And yet it works beautifully as a coupe. It just looks lovely.
Yeah, I think it's a graceful, elegant sort of car. Yeah.
The only issue is the size of the doors. You know, you have to, when you get in it, the driver's door shuts when you put your clog on the brake pedal. So you don't have to reach out and sort of pull this 200 kilogram door shut. there's obviously a power switch as well, but it's quite a wheeze. You know, you get in the car, put your foot on the brake and press the power on, and in comes the door. It's good.
It suits the nature of a car like that, doesn't it? An EV powertrain. Because you sort of suspect...
Definitely. Yeah.
You sort of suspect, actually, that's kind of what they've been trying to make anyway.
You know,
they've been trying to make an engine that is as smooth as that for most of their history.
It's so in character, the powertrain, with the capability of the aims of the car. And the thing that really impressed me too is it's got a monster battery. I've slightly forgotten how big it is, but it's got a 300 plus mile range and extremely big and heavy car. But it doesn't. You know how some big EVs have trouble with pitch? They just don't ride nicely. The Audi that I've come here today in is sort of okay, but the V8 is better. But this Rolls is absolutely unimpeachable, perfect, I thought.
Yeah.
I couldn't fault it. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah. I drove one on the press launch, and there was a twisty bit of road, really twisty, California Canyon Road, as they call them out there. And it was terrific. I'd had a really long day and had to, because I'd flown out there and then had to drive it that night to make the magazine deadline, basically. So I said, look, I know the press drives are tomorrow officially, but can I please take one for 2 hours, because I need to write it up. And so I'd had a pretty long day, mate. I think it was probably 3 a.m. UK time or something.
Yeah,
like
wrong.
Left-handed
as well?
Left-handed as well. But I took it up this road and started swinging it round some corners, and I thought, I don't want to bring this back. It was such a... For its weight and its girth and everything else, I thought it steered and handled amazingly well.
Yeah.
You know, much better than it had a right to. I think, on a Sussex road, it might have filled more of the available space. But still, on that road, I thought, this for a car this big, it should not be steering and handling quite this way.
No, on those roads around the Goodwood Estate, which are reasonably open, but you've usually got broken stuff in the, on the verges and crowns on them and all that, it steered really well, really well. So you could see the development in the thing. It was good. Liked it.
Do you consider it a driver's car? I sort of think I do with a lot of rollers,
Yeah.
Not in a sports car kind of way, But I get a genuine satisfaction from driving.
Oh, that's the point, I think. There's a sort of fascination in driving it. I'd much rather drive it than be driven in it, for sure. And there is genuine precision in the car, isn't there? You know, directional stability and really nice, quite responsive steering. You know, good car, good car.
Yeah. But buyers aren't mugs, are they, either? That's the other thing. It sort of has to justify the cost. It's not as if they turn up with no expectations of it being value for money, in a sense.
I think it's true. They expect the best. They're pretty discerning. I guess that's how you get to be rich.
Mm.
But I found myself thinking that, you know, in an era when people pay 1.5 million quid for a very good but supercar, which is in effect less of a car and perhaps less usable, I thought it was, you could argue that it's not bad value for money.
Yeah,
I know it sounds ridiculous, but it did strike me that.
Mm. Yeah, the costs that go into making them, they don't make many of them, you know, so it's not.
No.
I've got a friend who's got a BMW iX who filled it up the other day, charged it up the other day, and the range said 405 miles.
Boy.
Which I thought was unbelievable.
Gosh.
I don't know whether it got that, but, you know, if you can get anywhere near that, that's pretty good going, isn't it?
Well, it makes you feel safe, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got to go from the Cotswolds to Ryan back tomorrow in this Audi, which does a bit over 200, realistically, about 210, 200, 210.
Mm.
And there'll be a fair bit of... It'll be all right, and we'll find charges, but there'll be probably an hour and a half's worth of just sitting about.
Mm. There's a... I think I might have said it in the Spectre first drive. It would do Cotswolds to Glyndebourne and back.
Hey.
From memory, I think. And I think it would. It would easily get you down there and back. And I don't think, if my memory serves me rightly, Rolls-Royce said they are not expecting many buyers to spend very long at public fast chargers. Because if they're going anywhere of a big distance, as you say, they've got 10 other cars to choose from.
Or the helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember, is it the Bugatti chief who was also Bentley's chief at one point? Wolfgang Dörheimer?
That's him.
He said on the Chiron launch, he was talking about his time at Bentley, and he said, with, you know, the big Bentley customers will come in and they might say to their friends, come and see me this weekend. I've got a suite at the local football club. And then there's a hotel that I'd really like afterwards that they know us and we can stay there and we'll go and blah, blah, blah. He said, then you move to Bugatti and it is people saying to their friends, come and visit my football club and then we'll go and stay at my hotel. And it's that's the difference between those two companies. And I suspect Rolls-Royce is probably towards the Bugatti end of things as a rule, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Smaller, cheaper, electric, Fiat 500.
Oh,
it's going to become not pure electric?
Well, there's talk that the 500e is going to have a hybrid, 70 horsepower hybrid version, because EVs are not selling with the speed that was expected.
Mm-hmm.
The 500e is was built just to be an EV, and suddenly here they are putting a petrol hybrid powertrain back into it. It's going to take a couple of years to do it, or most of 2 years to do it, I think, which says something about the Stellantis' expectations for the expansion of EVs, doesn't it? Slower than was thought. And I just see it as it'll be interesting. I love the car. I think, look at that styling. I think it's beautiful. But I think it's a sad step in a way, because it seems to me that the people who started all this, the governments of the world, are the ones that can move the levers and make it possible they can stimulate the EV market if they want to. It costs money.
Hmm.
But they're not doing it, a lot of them are not doing it. Some are. Norway.
Yeah.
And I wish they would, rather than create these sort of freaks like that.
Do we know much about the type of hybrid? This will be a pluggable hybrid, will it, presumably, or just a non-plug? Do we know much about what it'll be technically, this 500?
I think it'll be I've only read pretty sketchy news stories, but I thought it was going to be the 70 horsepower powertrain that they currently use in the 500 petrol. You know, there's a slight...
Gotcha.
The original 500 is a little bit smaller than a 500e, which is a completely new car. I think they're going to take that powertrain, 70 horsepower, mild hybrid, and just bung it in the 500e body, because there's something happening. I think where the place where the original 500 is made, the plant is going to shut or something. So,
gotcha.
And they need to keep on selling 500s. It's the Fiat that sells that, yeah. And the Panda.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, because even if the plant wasn't, I wonder how long they could still sell that the previous shape 500 and try and get it through the latest round of safety regs and everything else.
Well, you can bet there'd be a lot of investment required, yeah. Couldn't you?
Yeah.
No, I think that's their conclusion. But it's essential to keep the 500 line going, and this is the viable way of doing it. But it just... it's a freak of nature, but it is a shame, and the cars are going to be funny, I think.
It'd be weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Be a strange thing.
Because you've got this thing which was deliberately configured to have a battery underneath and a little electric motor, and now suddenly it's going to have a lump of iron in the front. I mean, admittedly, not a massive lump of iron, triple, I think it is.
But still, what's underneath it?
Yeah.
You know, when you take out that much, I mean, they're not big batteries, are they? But they are, you know, they're not insignificant.
Yeah, decent percentage of the car's weight.
First time a car has been retro-engineered like that?
I think so, yeah, I think so. That's the other... I found myself speculating on other cars that could do with having the EV. And I came up with the Ford Mach-E. I thought, you know, a nice 302 turbocharged in the nose, perfect, fix the ride, make it go, sound good.
I have a feeling there is a Tesla Model S or two which has had a Chevy LS engine swap in the US. and I do think, you know, a Model S is a good-looking car, and actually as an old-school hot rod performance saloon, hatchback, whatever, yeah, I could get behind that. I like the idea of that. Yeah.
Do you remember there was a defunct, I've forgotten the name of it, oh God, it's a terrible memory, but there was a car a few years ago that was quite a reasonably successful electric saloon car in America for a while, but it went wrong, and Bob Lutz and his mates got hold of the last run-out cars and started to fit V8s.
Yeah, that wasn't a Fisker Karma, was it?
I think it was the Fisker Karma, well done.
That's a good-looking car.
It was.
And Fisker now still in trouble again.
Yeah, with the ocean,
Which I also think I haven't tried it, but Matt Saunders, road test editor, tried it, liked it a lot, thought it was a good car, I think.
Yeah.
But,
It's just making this business of building one and then making them in numbers and making money out of it. It's just such a crippling thing to do. You know, it's only the really the fittest survive, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, crikey, yeah. It's so hard to make cars at any volume.
Yeah.
Ford makes basically no money out of passenger cars in Europe, does it? It makes its money out of commercial vehicles in Europe.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't make money out of commercial vehicles if it didn't also have the car stuff to support both.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the case, isn't it? But the margins are... I think Suzuki makes... They were saying last week they make something like a 3% margin.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time,
a good few years ago in Autocar, we got into trouble by writing this rather flagship story, which was to the effect that Ford was a bank with a car company hanging off the side of it, and the real money was made in financing cars,
in
not
finance.
Making them.
Mm.
And I got a phone call from Bill Ford saying, this is not right yet.
Oh, really? Did you write the story?
I wrote parts of the story, yeah. And my name was on the story, but there were some pretty good sources.
Mm.
But, I got my backside tanned over that.
Yeah. But without... I mean...
Wasn't actually wrong.
No.
It's just... his point was, actually, we do make... You know, if we weren't making the cars, we wouldn't make that... We wouldn't be able to do the deals, point one. And also, there are a hell of a lot of people in the same boat. Why pick on us?
Yeah, that, I think entirely fair, probably. Yeah.
It was fair. But it was interesting to talk. You know, the phone rings in the office and there's Bill Ford ringing from the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah. We talked briefly last week about Dale Wyatt, the Suzuki GB director of Four Wheels, and he was talking about how finance has made, you know, has democratized buying cars,
yeah,
basically. And he thinks that that is, that that model is pretty much under, you know, is under threat. And actually the affordable car for everybody is at risk, which I think is an interesting
What's going to overturn it?
Well, you can't sell small, cheap petrol cars because batteries are too expensive. And if you put small batteries in cars, you don't get very much range, which may affect people's desire. Suzuki is coming from a position where it doesn't sell EVs yet.
Yeah, got it.
So it's, you know, there will be people at the other end of the EV selling scale who think very differently,
yeah,
I'm sure. But he says, look, you know, we sell at £19,000 Swift, which will do everything you want, and actually private customers want that, and they think there'll be a roadblock 18 months down the road where they run into real problems selling enough EVs to fill the quota that have to be sold.
Yeah, the amount of noise that's going on at the moment and effort about everybody sort of boasting about working on low value and small EVs, you know, Renault, VW Group, Skoda and VW this very day talking about it, that certainly does feed the argument that it's a very, very important matter. Mm. You know, they need to get on with it, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So, and also, he's a pretty smart guy, Dale, isn't he?
Mm.
So, interesting to hear his point of view.
Yeah, and also, they're also a company, I suppose, that sell a lot more cars to private buyers
yeah.
than
oh, yes.
the other way around. You know, people who are buying small, affordable cars who aren't going to spend $35,000 on a compact
no.
EV crossover, good I guess. Point. And there are, yeah, whereas there are other people who think very differently.
Got to be flexible in this racket, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't start a car company, mate.
Let's no. I think we're better off with a couple of idiots with a couple of typewriters.
I think it's probably easier, yeah. And there'll be more of that in just a moment, but Steve and I are going to take a quick break.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to My Week in Cars. Andrew Hurst writes to us, Steve, to say, maybe you should comment on the fact that the BMW 340D engine is ending production in June this year.
Yeah.
I didn't. Did you know that?
I didn't.
No.
Well, only because of his letter.
Oh, I see. Oh, it's because he sent it to both. Did he send it to both of us?
He sent it to
both.
Oh,
yeah. I see. I thought he sent it just to me. As well as the X3 M40D, probably one of the best engines on sale today. And who needs more car than an M340D? Surely the best current all-rounder. People talk about the 2030-35 deadlines, but good engines are going far sooner than that. All 5-series diesels have gone from the UK market too, although that is more of a choice of BMW UK. 340D is a pretty good, compelling car, you would
yeah.
think.
Yeah, but the trouble you've got, I think, is, you know, it's the school run, isn't it? How come your new cars are diesel?
Hmm.
Diesels are just tarred and feathered now, aren't they, these days?
Yeah.
I think it's, however good or bad, however good, it's just hard to withstand the peer pressure.
Hmm. And the company car benefit and car tax, bearing in mind that, you know, what, 8 out of 10 of those cars will be fleet cars when they're sold. The benefit and car in one of those will be, what, 27-28% BIK, and an EV is 2%.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know. But yes, I agree, Andrew. Terrific
he's
engine,
right,
great car.
He's right. There's so many very nice diesels around, aren't there? That,
yeah.
that nearly new, and even 6-8 year old cars, beautiful diesel engines. But it's, you know, we've passed the threshold, I fear.
Yeah. On my column, Andrew says, is the 340D the best current all-round car? My column this week, Steve, we talk about enough car. How big
or how much performance or how much luxury, I don't know what how you want to define it. It comes from a letter we had the other week in the mag from somebody who was talking about the Twizy, Renault Twizy, the Citroën Ami, and his own Mitsubishi iMiEV, or the Peugeot equivalent, yeah. Ion, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
He said that the quadricycles were, in quotes, not enough car.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by that. What car is enough car, do we reckon?
It's interesting, isn't it? I think there is definitely a threshold. He's absolutely right about this, and you are. I tend to think that there are just important things that enough car has to do. First of all, the suspension has to function adequately, which just get for me, you know, removes a Citroën.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there has to be, for me, I mean, I would say this given my dimensions, but there has to be sensible accommodation and sensible ingress egress.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I really believe that smallness, economy, particularly not too much width, is really important, and they're going to become more so.
Mm.
So we were having a bit of a discussion about K cars, weren't we?
Yeah, the Japanese compact class of car. It's a sort of I don't know, in Japan, I
sort of tax class, is it, or dimensions class?
Yeah, and I think in certain cities, to qualify for a parking space, don't you? You have to have a K car and nothing bigger. Is that right? Is that
the thing?
So yeah, and they're pretty small, aren't they? They're like 1.6 something meters wide, but I might be wrong about that. But they're pretty narrow. So
even a Panda may not be wide. I think
it's too wide. I think that's too wide. Yeah. Yeah, I think one Caterham is a K car, which is that 170, which was designed with those regulations in mind.
Wow, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the Japanese take 50% of all Caterham 170 production, I think, or maybe more. I'm going to see them tomorrow. I'll ask them. But yeah, it's the whole point of it was that they liked that idea, and were it not for the Japanese market, they probably wouldn't have done that car.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do a lot.
Well, it does a lot with that engine, doesn't it? Little Suzuki Donkey.
Yeah.
Are you going? You said a drift day tomorrow.
Yeah, I need to talk to them about some upcoming features, and they said, "Well, there's a drift day down at Brands, which we used to run in conjunction with Caterham." Do you remember we used to advertise it in the mag? And some of the road testers would go along back a few years ago.
Yeah.
We should do that again.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And it's anyway, you go to a big car park and you drift around some donuts.
Would a 170 drift? Would it, Suzuki one? Be a bit short of poke, would it?
Probably a bit short of poke. But if you stuck it on the right tyres, I suppose anything will do, really.
Skinny wheels.
But I think they use something a bit with a bit more power, 135 horsepower. And even then, I think they put them on some fairly hard back tyres, because they'll do the whole day of drifting without wearing out a set of tyres.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's
But I think, to get back to enough car, I think... Mm. I mean, there are plenty of small cars that look big to me now. You know, the latest Renault Clio, even though it's a handsome car and it's got lots of nice things about the powertrain and so on, that's too much car for me.
It's quite big, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, most super minis are anything sort of more than 4 meters.
Yeah.
Is
even that's
certainly generous. Enough.
I mean, the wife's Cooper Mini is you know, it's not exactly a fat car, but even that's a substantial car to me. I could imagine something even more, but just a bit smaller.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm intrigued about with just enough car is how enthusiastic I am about the idea of having just enough car. So like a Caterham 170 would be enough for me most of the time. Be perfect. That Suzuki Swift or a Citroën C1, you know, that would be enough car for me. No question. Kia Picanto, I love. Hyundai i10, I really enjoy it. I don't feel that way about most other things in life. You know, yeah. I never think to myself, what's just enough food to,
yeah.
you know, how well, cold
I loved your analogy in your column talking about what's enough roof on my house.
Yeah, yeah, because you sit in a caterer room, right? You get a wet elbow when it rains, a right elbow. If I got that in the house, I'd be furious yeah. with the roofer.
Yeah. yeah.
But somehow just in a cup, just enough, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I've had just enough tea today, you know, yeah. and I don't think that about anything else, but somehow there's a real... I don't know what it is about it, but there's in it, I feel that way about some cars in a way that I don't about.
But the beauty other of things. Those, I think, the i10 and the Picanto are just about it. Actually, now that I think about it, because there's a joy in the way they function. You know, the little engine does something special, and the narrowness does, you know, confers something special on the driving experience.
Yeah,
and the lightness in the steering, and so.
Yeah, somehow
so you're actually benefiting
things.
from the smallness.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. That Silence SO4 was probably not enough. Won't it be enough for the circumstances it is designed for?
Yeah.
But it is not enough for, you know, it'd be fine if everybody had one.
Yeah.
But it's...
Yeah. It's still essentially a local car, isn't it?
It's still essentially a quadricycle.
You couldn't really do your 70 down a motorway.
No, it'll do 50-something miles an hour, which is cool. It's plenty, you know, it's ample around town. And you can, in the right locations, if the infrastructure supported it, you could swap batteries in and out as quickly as filling the fuel tank, which is cool. I like the idea. But, you know, we set off down a very different path. I don't know. Either... when we started developing cars or when the Romans made roads wide enough for two horse carts to pass each other.
Yeah.
You know, we made roads 6 meters wide 2000 years ago. So we don't need 1.3 meter wide cars today, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I did like it quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's the, you know, maybe there's fun to be had in, there's more fun to be had, isn't there, from less somehow.
And don't you love the? I mean, you're an engineer, mate. You don't you like the? Also, the. I think the challenge of building a Picanto or an i10, when you haven't got much resources, it's got to do everything. It's got to go for a year without servicing. It's got to deliver 60 mpg. It's still got to be able to cruise at 75 or 80 down the motorway.
Yeah.
It has to carry four people. There has to be a bit of luggage. That is such a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. The answer people don't want when they say, what's the best car you've ever driven?
Yeah.
The answer is the sort of 2008 era Ford Fiesta ZTEC S.
Yeah.
Because it does all of those things that you said, plus it's really enjoyable to drive. Fantastic ride and handling combination. You know, really, really good fun, really practical. And I think they were, I don't know, £14,000-£15,000 or something like that. Anyone can make a £2 million supercar,
because
it's £2 million, so of course you can go money no object, yeah, so what,
yeah.
But there is a real, yeah, I think there's a real, well, I don't know, a virtue in and a real skill in making a Kia Picanto for £14,000 that's as good as it is.
Yep. On the outskirts of Cheltenham, where near Aero Club, there's a business that seems to deal only in Fiestas, and they've got about 40 in a line. I keep meaning to call in. I'm going to go and talk to the bloke and say, what about the Fiesta then? Give me a speech.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Oh, I wonder what he does. Well, I suppose there's plenty to keep going for a while.
Yeah, well, they're all pretty modern.
Yeah.
Well, not all of them, but most.
Mm.
So I think, you know, they... But he definitely sees the beauty of... I quite like one make... dealers, you know, I think I rattled on a while ago about a bloke in South London who does only or mostly BMW i3s. I just love that, the idea that this bloke will know every nut and bolt, and you know, he'll look at the upholstery and say, oh yes, that's the, you know, the camel, you know, lizard hide or something like that.
I bumped into a bloke yesterday at Cafe Na Machine, the Bowl, Millbrook.
Oh yeah,
where we were doing doing some photos on a long termer plus a road test car, and I walked in and a bloke was reading a copy of Autocar.
Uh-huh.
I got chatting to him, and he was talking about his cars, but also his old man. He said his old man has got a BMW i3, an early V12 Vanquish Aston Martin, and a Land Rover Discovery 3 with a petrol V8. And sure. I thought, what a three-car lineup that is.
That is a good one.
Because you'll just mooch around in the i3 most of the time.
Yeah.
And then, but you've got those other two. What great cars.
There is all good.
That's
yeah.
A car for every occasion. You've got something to do, as we've talked about with collections before. Yeah. You know, you've got a car that does everything, really.
It's so enticing, isn't it, that stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah. What should we talk next? We've got time. Why not? It's round headlights.
Well, I've just got... I was on about just liking cars not to be too aggressive. I don't see why everything has to convey this kind of anger and preeminence and sort of general, you know, I'm better than you, get out of my way. And round headlights look friendlier to me than these sort of rather, admittedly streamlined, but sort of angry lights. I just don't like them. So, yeah. Well, I don't... It's wrong to say I don't like them, but I don't see why we need to convey aggression in car design, and I wish there was less of it. I was almost, you know, when I started thinking about this, I was going to try and compile a list of unaggressive cars, and I might still give it a go if I can find any.
Yeah, there is something in that, isn't there? Because it's surprising how often we will read the bump that comes with a car, and which says... You know, lower, assertive. Wider, assertive on the road, aggressive, recognisable, aggressive, assertive, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And I just, well, that's fine. But I'm not sure I want to convey that.
When I drive home in a minute.
Smile is much nicer, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just not going to want to care about being assertive. Just want to get there.
Yeah.
And enjoy myself.
Yeah. Steve Saxty has got a book about BMW.
Yeah, it's a sort of trilogy. It's a book. It's quite an expensive book, you know, sort of well into the ton area. But what he's done is to get on side with the design people at BMW and written this amazing tome, really, which is about BMW design from the end of World War II to now. And he's done it by going through the files and talking to their archivist, who's amazingly, you know, lucid and helpful bloke. And it's just... There are two main volumes. One is, you know, what happened since the 40s. The other one is a collection of amazing cars that you never knew existed and perhaps should have.
Mm.
And then there's a load of images that he particularly likes, you know, just highlights of BMW. But what it wraps up into is just this lovely homage, really, to BMW, and it makes sense of the progression. And honestly, I think I can't think of a better car history book I've ever read.
Oh, really?
It took me weeks to read the bloody thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it takes a while to get it to assimilate it all, but there's so much information.
Mm.
He's a hell of a researcher, this man, boy.
That's cool.
Did Ford, pretty good Ford books as well in the past. Look forward to the next one. Mm. Rolls Royce, please, Steve.
Ah, excellent. Yeah, BMW not afraid of an aggressive face themselves these days. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. He makes a few points about the kidney grill. He says there were other eras where the kidney grill was very big, bold, and prominent as well.
Mm.
But I think their issue is just finding something fresh to do with it without chucking it away.
Yeah,
because people run out of road with things, don't they? One of the regrets I have, for instance, Kia. You know, they had that whole raft of cars with a so-called tiger nose, with that little, there was a in the middle of the grill there was a little sort of dipped.
Top of the windscreen as well, didn't it? Like was sort of trying to represent ears ever so slightly. Yeah,
and it seems to have been ditched. They say that it works at night or something, but the tiger nose essentially is gone, and that seemed to me to be a thing that allowed me to recognise a Kia at 400 yards. You know, and. I think it's a shame to chuck things away.
Yeah, me too.
anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Be back.
Just keep doing it. I think if it works, just keep doing it.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the end of episode 82 of the My Weekend Cars podcast. You can find more from Autocar over at themagazineshop.com, which has been doing what it does for 129 years. Steve and I will be back this time next week. Thanks, mate.
See you soon, mate.
See you soon.